Welcome to Inside Voices, a well-read magazine in between the pages podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Robert Gwaltney.
And I'm your other host, Jeffrey Dale Lofton. Tonight we have Richard Mirabella with us. Richard is a writer and civil servant living in upstate New York. His stories have appeared in Story Magazine, American Short Fiction, Split Lip Magazine, and elsewhere. And he's the author of the new novel, Brother and Sister Enter the Forest.
And some people are saying some really amazing things. It's been a much anticipated book. It's been a New York Times Book Review Editor's Choice, The Washington Post, a noteworthy book, Harper's Bazaar, a best new book of 2023, Goodreads, a buzziest debut novel of the year. Welcome, Richard. We're happy to have you on Inside Voices.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
So I'm going to kick us off with the blurb that you got from a mutual friend of ours, Mr. Zach Sala, author of Let's Get Back to the Party. And this is what Zach has to say. Befitting its fairy tale title, Brother and Sister Enter the Forest sits in a mist of unease, haunted by the restless ghosts of childhood violence and abuse. But what lingers most in Richard Mirabella's masterful novel are the brilliant moments of tenderness between siblings, between lovers, between friends, between parents and children, all of them grasping for one another's hands in the face of so much pain, all of them fighting to meet life's messiness with compassion and love. This is brave, beautiful storytelling. Pretty amazing. Great words.
And I was really thrilled.
And I certainly completely agree with everything he said. You know, I love this reference to the brother and sister enter the forest and this fairy tale title. And I read that you drew some level of inspiration from a Grimm's fairy tale. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yes, I did. My novel isn't a retelling, but it's partially inspired by a Grimm's tale called Little Brother and Little Sister, which I read in this wonderful translation of the original fairy tales. And what I took from it was the idea of transformation. The brother and sister run away from home, of course, because their stepmother is cruel to them. What they don't know is that she's a witch. And as they're walking through the forest, the brother drinks from a stream and is transformed into a fawn. And the sister says, you know, oh, I will, you know, care for you for the rest of our lives. You know, you'll be a deer and I'll take care of you. I just kind of thought, oh, I like this idea, you know, kind of running with the idea of a transformation or a curse. The difference is that in a fairy tale, a curse, the arc is always that the curse is broken. I thought, well, you know, what if the curse never breaks? What if you just remain, you know, the fawn forever?
Like life, really, right? The curses never really seem to be broken much. What's Grimm's fairy tales are so dark. Tonally, you know, your book is very dark as well. And of course, I love dark. I love literature and all the dark places. And the ending, you know, as you say, and no spoilers during our conversation, but it's not a happy ending. Grimm's fairy tales typically never do resolve in a beautiful way. Is the resolution, the conclusion of your story, what you envisioned from the very beginning?
No, it surprised me. I think my novel has three endings. It has an ending for the sister, an ending for the brother, and then an ending together. And strangely, that the ending together is when they're kids, when they're teenagers. And I wrote that section actually in the middle of the book. And I thought, oh, wow, that's the ending. That moment, I think, says everything. And it's sort of bitterly ironic, too. I won't give it away, but when you read the book, it has, I think, more power in reflection of what came before. It's out of sequence, but yeah.
Absolutely.
Spend a lot of time with both Justin and Willa together and apart, you know, throughout the course of the book, and you know, in the past, and you know, in the later in their lives. So they each have a really strong voice in the story, in this book. And so I love audiobooks. I love that, you know, narrators sort of create another work of art out of a piece of written work. And this book is so beautifully narrated by Eve Passaltiner. But it makes me wonder, because it's voiced by her, is this Willa's story or is it Justin's story?
Yeah, I actually really love this question because I don't know the answer. Everybody has a different idea of whose book it is. When I gave this book to a friend of mine who's a queer playwright and activist, and he read it and he said, "Why is this called Brother and Sister Enter the Forest? This is the brother's book. This is all about Justin." And I thought, really? I don't agree with that. It's both of their books, I think. There are times when I really think it's Willa's story. And there are times when I think it's Justin's. But it's interesting that you bring up Eva, because a lot of people have said, oh, why did you choose a woman to narrate the story? I got about 8 auditions to listen to. And honestly, the answer is kind of boring. She was just the best. She was the best one.
Were all of the voice actors female, or were there any, was there a range of genders and ages of voice actors?
There was. Yeah, there were, I think there were several men, there were women of, different ages. And there was just something about her personality and the way she attacked some of the language, and she just brought it to life for me. When I listened to it, I just thought, I don't feel like I'm listening to my book, which I thought was a good thing. it felt like something different, like a different piece of art. So
I love that audiobooks sort of transform works in that way.
Yeah, me too. And I had nothing to do with it once I picked her. They just kind of went away and did their thing. And she made some choices, and they're her choices. And it's sort of like TV or a movie, somebody makes their own piece of art with something that you made.
Did you have any conversations with her following, after she recorded it, to discuss the story? Did you learn anything about the story that you hadn't really considered or hadn't explored very much?
I haven't really had any long conversations with her, just some short interactions and just thanking her so much for doing such a great job. But also, she has expressed a love of the story, which I think is so great. I'm glad that, that she enjoyed it. She had to read the whole thing out loud. And for me, it really did something wonderful for me, which it helped me accept the language of my book and kind of love it again. And I know you must understand as writers yourselves that when you write a long piece like this and you go through years and years of editing and the publication process is so long, and by the end of it, you're just like, I don't know what I think about this.
Right, exactly.
I don't know if it's good. I don't know if these sentences are anything. And hearing her read them made me love my book. That's a gift.
Absolutely. And what you talked about the language of your book. And one of the things that I admired most is the spare quality of the storytelling, which I do believe lends itself beautifully to the overall tone of this book. I think through the spare approach that you took, there really is a tension that you build with your work. And what, and I think that it's certainly, I love the fact that people are discussing whether or not it's Willa or Justin's story. I think that is indicative of the power of your storytelling. Of course, there's this underpinning of sibling relationship between Willa and Justin. And the fact that Justin is gay, it's not really the crux of the novel, which I celebrate. It really is a novel with a fellow who just happens to be gay. Justin's broken emotionally and physiologically. His heterosexual sister is equally troubled. Did you feel the pressure to depict Justin differently?
No. I mean, I felt a lot of pressure. I put a lot of pressure on myself because there is queer on queer violence in this book, and that worried me. But I wanted it to be clear that Justin doesn't have a problem with the fact that he's gay. It's everyone else It's the world that has the problem. You know, he relishes in his desire for Nick. So I didn't want it to be like a coming of age novel in the sense that he's struggling with his sexuality and then is freed from that struggle. That's not what this book is about. So I didn't feel the pressure to write a certain kind of queer novel. I did want my novel to be called a queer novel. I don't even know why. It was just important to me. But yes, I don't think that is the entire subject of the novel.
I agree. I think that what you've done is just made the subject matter more universally acceptable by taking the approaches that you did, and I certainly do applaud you for that. You referenced coming of age, and Jeffrey and I were recently having a conversation. And Jeffrey, I won't speak for you, but I will. So Jeffrey feels that there is a, by the very nature of coming of age, that there is a hopefulness to that. And that's one of the things that your book is dark, and there's not a great amount of hope in the messaging. Talk a little bit about your take on coming of age.
Sure. So I have to remember that people will hear me speaking sometimes. Call my novel a coming of age novel. I understand why they want to use that language to sell it. I understand that publishers have to label things in a certain way so people come to it with certain expectations. But when I spoke to my agent about this book, he said, coming of what age? and that's kind of how I feel about it, honestly. I think it may begin as something that feels like a coming of age novel, but I think it's really about somebody who can't grow up, who is getting older, you know, is living, but not necessarily coming into their own. I think some people just are stuck. And I think Justin is stuck.
That's really the compelling part of it, though. It may start out appearing to be one thing, but it takes you in a direction that is new and different and unexpected. And that's kind of groundbreaking.
Well, thank you.
Agreed.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on talking about the brother-sibling dynamic. And you mentioned earlier in this conversation that in the fairy tale, in the Grimm's fairy tale, that the mother is a witch. And so this mother...
Stepmother.
Stepmother, of course.
But the mother in this book is... there's a very complex relationship with both children. Can you talk more about that and how... The stepmother witch in the fairy tale might have influenced how you created this mother in the book?
Sure. I wanted to be very careful with that. I didn't want her just to be cruel. I think she has a lot going on. I think she's grieving, number one. This is someone who I think wasn't prepared to be a single mother, and she's simultaneously grieving her husband. Justin is not perfect. I think he is a troubled person, even before the terrible things that happened to him. I think he pushes her buttons. I like that he's not perfect. You know, he's not a saintly victim. He's kind of a punk kid in a lot of ways, but he's very sensitive too.
Yeah.
But so I wanted them to have different relationships too. Because I think that's kind of true to life. That's one of the things that interests me about sibling stories. You know, Willa and Grace have a very different relationship from Justin and Grace. And I think for Willa, it's a struggle, you know, of trying to keep the peace or trying to create balance, or, you know, she's not able to, it's not possible. So I wanted to make sure that there are moments of tenderness with Grace that are perhaps a little surprising, but also she's a homophobe. And I think it's infinitely more complicated than we see in movies or TV shows. She never uses a slur. Well, maybe at the wedding she does. There's that scene at the wedding, but I didn't want her to just be outright homophobic to him. I think it's very subtle. It's this way she just cannot accept him or cannot understand him and refuses to try to understand him. And I think that's incredibly painful, very hurtful to feel that your parent doesn't accept you or love you, maybe, doesn't know how to.
Yeah, there's such nuance in that character. There are tender moments. They're very spotted through. There are moments that, you know, Justin and Willa recognize as tender moments. But there's a huge range, as you mentioned, to show how complex and how conflicted she is, you know, being the mother of these particular children, him in particular.
Right. And I felt the moments that are in her point of view surprised me. I expected just to write this novel from Willa and Justin's POV. And then I started writing scenes from Grace's point of view or Shivam's point of view. And those to me were very exciting kind of gifts that just came up out of nowhere. And I'm glad I wrote them. They made me sort of understand Grace a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there are moments where she feels like a failure. I can't really bring it up because it would spoil something.
But sure.
There's a moment where she's thinking, you know, I should be doing this thing that I'm not doing. Why am I not doing it? You know, she just can't.
You know, the cover of the book is lovely. And there's this childhood hobby that Willa at a young age sort of engages her brother in, the making of the diorama, which is this really a whimsical childhood hobby. It's an art form. It's a mode of storytelling. Talk a little bit about the diorama and how that came to you and why you felt it compelled to incorporate that into the story.
Sure. And first, I just want to say, I love the cover so much. It's Sarah Wood is the designer, and I just am in love with it. So, and I'm glad she included the diorama elements. So that was the first thing that came to me, was Willa and the dioramas, just this person making little worlds. And I didn't know how it would work in the book. And it became really important, I think, to Willa's character especially. And I think Justin is sort of haunted by them. He makes jokes about them at times in the book, but I think he's very angry about some of sort of symbols of his life being used in her art, in Willa's art. But I think a lot of it is about control, is about sort of trying to understand things. And there's a moment where I believe Justin is thinking, like, you know, she thinks she can shrink the world and try to understand it, you know, and that's not possible, you know, or she only wants things in her life if she placed them there with tweezers, I think is something he thinks. Yeah.
So I'm curious to know if, and it makes perfect sense that this is the way that Willa has some measure of control in her life, because, you know, it gets pretty difficult. So there are some really dark scenes and images in the dioramas. Why are they not perfect and idyllic?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because I don't think Willa was ever given the opportunity to work through these things. She's not necessarily a witness to violence, but she understands that violence has occurred in her brother's life, but it's been hidden from her. And so she's imagined so much. When he ran away, she imagined what could possibly be happening to him. And I think so some of the dioramas reflect that fear and sort of the nightmares associated with not knowing. There are the first image of a diorama in the book is sort of a lovely moment between them, sneaking into the public pool in their town and sort of floating together at night. But then, yeah, as it goes on, we start to see, you know, there's like decapitation and, you know, these strange sort of like incredibly violent images. And I think that really comes from her imagination, the imagination she had to sort of go to because she didn't have the truth.
So Richard, I don't know where the time goes, but we are at the conclusion of our time together today. But you know, it has been a pleasure chatting with you about your beautifully dark novel, Brother and Sister Enter the Forest. But before we say our goodbyes, what's next for you?
Oh, well, I'm working on another novel. I have a story collection that I've sort of put aside, but I'm still thinking about it because I love short fiction. But I just got to a good place with my new novel. So I'm excited to get back into working on it. I think when my book came out and going on a little tour and everything, I just stopped writing completely. And I'm now trying to get back into the habit of doing it. So that's where I am right now.
Well, we wish you every success with Brother and Sister Enter the Forest. And when we're done behind the scenes, we'll have a conversation more in depth about what you're working on next. And folks will just have to tune in at a later time when you bring that book out into the world. So until next time, gentle listeners, I'm your host, Robert Gwaltney.
And I'm Jeffrey Dale Lofton. And remember, to be creative is to be courageous.